This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Florida vote in last year's presidential election is still under investigation. Bush won Florida by 537 votes. The New York Times just completed a six-month investigation into one aspect of the vote, Florida's late-arriving overseas absentee ballots. My guests are the two lead reporters on the story, David Barstow and Don Vanatta. Their front-page story was published Sunday. They analyzed the 2,490 ballots from Floridians living abroad, which were counted as legal votes after Election Day. The reporters found that 680 of those ballots were flawed. The reporters do not know for whom each individual ballot was cast, but 4 out of 5 were accepted in counties carried by Bush. The flawed votes included ballots without postmarks, ballots postmarked after the election, ballots without witness signatures, ballots mailed from within the U.S., and even ballots from people who voted twice. These ballots would have been disqualified had Florida's election laws been strictly enforced. In response to the Times' findings, White House spokesman Ari Fleischer said, "This election was decided by the voters of Florida a long time ago. All but the most partisan Americans have moved on." I asked David Barstow and Don Vanatta why they wanted to investigate what really happened in Florida's overseas vote count.
Well, David and I were asked by Joe Lelyveld, the executive editor of the Times, in late December to go back to Florida and look carefully at what happened and take some time and really look closely and decide what we wanted to do. And he left the playing field wide open. And we decided to look specifically at the overseas absentee ballots in early January because there was quite a bit of confusion at the time of their counting. And we also discovered, quite to our surprise, on Catherine Harris's website, the Secretary of State of Florida, that in fact Al Gore got more votes than George W. Bush when you take out the overseas absentee ballots. Gore actually got 202 more votes than Bush. And that discovery led us to decide that we should look very carefully at this group of ballots.
Did you find anything that would have actually changed the outcome of the election?
It's hard to say in a way. One of the most difficult things about this project is, of course, the actual ballots that voters fill out when they send in an overseas absentee ballot are separated from the ballot envelope. So there actually is no way to know precisely and for sure how an individual voter voted. We did, to try to get some measure of this, retain a Harvard professor to do some statistical modeling, and he came back with three conclusions, in essence, when we asked him what would have happened had these 680 ballots that we found did not comply with Florida law. What would have happened if these ballots had been thrown out? And his first conclusion was that if these ballots had been thrown out, we actually don't know. There's no way to know with mathematical certainty whether Mr. Gore would have won or whether Mr. Bush would have won. However, his best estimate, based on a number of very sophisticated modeling techniques that he's well known for in the field of statistics and political science, was that Mr. Bush probably would have won by 245 votes as opposed to 537 votes. He also found, though, that there is a small chance that Mr. Gore would have won the election or could have won the election had these ballots been thrown out. And so that was probably the primary finding in terms of what would have happened had these ballots not been counted.
Now, one of your main findings in your investigation of the absentee vote is that the Republicans used a double standard in what votes they pushed to have counted and what votes they wanted eliminated. They used one standard in Republican strongholds and another in Democratic strongholds. What were the differences?
Mr. Gore got a lot of criticism for having a strategy that, as the Republicans put it, was aimed at disenfranchising members of the military. One of the big findings that we came up with here through the course of our reporting was that actually the Republicans had a strategy that was set out in some pretty elaborate instructions to try to throw out as many civilian ballots as they could and to focus that effort in Gore counties. And it was our finding through our reporting and through our statistical analysis and through our database that actually this political strategy helped produce this unequal treatment of civilian and military ballots. And in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in suspending the manual recounts that ballots should not be treated unequally, this was a significant finding to us.
So the Supreme Court ruled that ballots should not be decided unequally and therefore the manual recount should not continue. But you're saying that the Republicans took a strategy of counting votes differently depending on whether they were civilian or military, thus contradicting the Supreme Court's equal treatment.
Yes. The argument that the Supreme Court embraced was the argument that was made by the Bush lawyers, and that is that the manual recounts that occurred in the Democratic counties applied different standards, arbitrary standards, and that it was unfair. There was a disparate treatment of the ballots in those places. And when the Florida Supreme Court said there should be a manual recount all over the state, that argument was taken to the Supreme Court. And what we found is several weeks before that argument was made in the Supreme Court, the Republican lawyers went about basically embracing that strategy as a political strategy. And in Democratic counties where Al Gore got more overseas absentee votes than George W. Bush, Republican lawyers were aggressively fighting for the disqualification of ballots sent in from civilian overseas citizens. Whereas at the same time, the very same time, simultaneously in Republican counties in the northern part of the state in particular, the Republicans were fighting for as many of those ballots to be counted as possible. And they were the ones that really pushed this disparate treatment that we found all over the state.
What were the arguments the Bush team used, depending on whether they were arguing to throw out votes or to count votes?
Well, this is really quite interesting. I mean, I think a lot of people remember that the Bush team made a lot about a Democratic memorandum written by an election law specialist in Tallahassee that essentially instructed Gore lawyers on the how-tos of challenging overseas absentee ballots. And they describe this as essentially a manifesto for disenfranchising members of the military. One of the things that we found that was very interesting is that the Republicans had a version of that Democratic memorandum that was almost identical in terms of describing here are the ways that you can challenge civilian overseas ballots with flaws such as no witnesses, no postmarks, et cetera. But at the same time, they also provided Republican lawyers with a separate set of instructions for defending military ballots with precisely the same flaws. Now, I know that in their arguments to the canvassing boards, we see from the transcripts and tapes and so forth, that they often made the argument that federal law and allowed a different standard for military ballots and civilian ballots. That, in other words, federal law kind of gave military voters a little bit more leeway, a little bit more benefit of the doubt. That actually is not the case. Federal law does not make that kind of distinction. Nor does state law. And I think actually in some of our final interviews with the Republican lawyers, they acknowledged as such.
My impression is that the arguments that were made by Republicans and Democrats in the count of the overseas ballot didn't get nearly the attention that the arguments made about the manual recount got. Do you think that the overseas ballot was kind of underneath the radar because all the cameras were trained on the manual recount?
There's no question about that. That's a main reason why David and I set out to do this project in January. It was below the radar screen. There are 67 counties in the state of Florida, and the counties were so far flung and so spread out, there were many counties where there were no national reporters present. And there was really no way. It all occurred on one day, on November 17th, into the early morning hours of November 18th, this counting. And so there was really no accounting of what happened by the national press. On the day after the count, the Republicans quickly went on the offensive and attacked the Gore campaign for this Herron memo that David talked about. And immediately all of the coverage shifted to that. It shifted to how the Democrats had sought to exclude the military vote, whereas there was absolutely no attention paid or very little attention paid to the Republican strategy. And so we set out to not only collect all of the ballot envelopes of all 3,700 overseas absentee ballots in January to build a database, but we also collected the canvassing board minutes, transcripts, tapes from all 67 counties and reviewed them all to really reconstruct what occurred in that 9-day period from November 17th when the first overseas ballot was counted to November 26th when the last one was counted.
My guests are New York Times reporters Don Vanetta and David Barstow. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are David Barstow and Don Vanetta, and they did a 6-month-long investigation for the New York Times into the overseas absentee vote in the presidential election. Let's look at what some of the flaws were in the overseas ballots. For example, let's look at postmarks. A lot of the absentee ballots, you can tell me exactly how many, didn't have postmarks.
Well, the issue here is a standard that was well established in Florida for nearly 20 years, which was Florida is one of the few states that actually allows overseas ballots to arrive after Election Day and be counted. In fact, that's one of the very unique things about this group of ballots. They're the only group of ballots that can legally be received after Election Day. But getting back to this standard, the standard said any overseas ballot to be valid, it has to have clear proof that it was cast on or before Election Day from outside the United States. The state of Florida, the election officials there have been, of course, worried about, on the one hand, making sure that people who are overseas get as much opportunity to vote as possible, but at the same time trying to prevent late voting or other kinds of fraudulent voting. And so this standard was widely, almost universally enforced in Florida for many years. What we found in this investigation is that there were hundreds of ballots that were accepted overwhelmingly in Bush counties that had no proof that they were, in fact, cast on or before Election Day from outside the United States. In fact, we found a number of ballots that were postmarked 4, 5, 6 days after the election. And in our interviews, we conducted hundreds of interviews around the world with voters. We found a substantial number of voters who acknowledged to us freely that, yes, we voted after the election. We were, of course, swept up in watching this drama unfold on CNN, and we wanted to get our votes in. The postmark issue really is meant to be that sort of that threshold barrier against late voting, improper voting, and yet hundreds of these ballots were counted in this election.
I found the number that you quoted. There were 344 ballots that had late, illegible, or missing postmarks. Now, what exactly were the arguments the Bush team used to include these ballots that had late, illegible, or missing postmarks?
Well, the most frequent argument that they made was that the voter should not be penalized for the lack of a postmark because the lack of a postmark is no fault of the voter. They repeatedly said that the voters should be given the benefit of the doubt that they, in fact, did cast their ballots on or before Election Day as the law requires.
Now, how does that square with arguments that the Bush team made in the manual recount?
Well, it's interesting because in the manual recount, one of their main rallying cries was that it's unfair to selectively change established election standards after the game has been played. And so in South Florida, they said, hey, it's not fair for, say, Broward County or Palm Beach County to suddenly switch from counting dimpled chads or hanging chads while other counties are applying a different standard. But what we found in this case is that with these overseas absentee ballots, the Bush team selectively went about trying to get the state's established election standards for counting overseas ballots changed in Bush strongholds while fighting for the old standards in Gore counties.
You mentioned that during this investigation, you found people who said, yes, we voted late. We saw that the election was deadlocked, and we wanted to get our vote in. So even though the election was over, we voted anyways. And probably some of those votes were counted. How did you find people who admitted to actually voting on an absentee basis after the election?
Well, the Times went to extraordinary lengths to talk to as many overseas voters as possible. We had a team of 20 reporters literally go physically to see voters in 8 or 9 countries around the world, as well as we called a total of about 300 voters and asked them a series of questions about how they voted. And in the course of that, 30 out of the 300 people that we interviewed acknowledged to us, freely admitted to us, that they in fact did vote late. And of that number, 4 of the 30 people had their votes count.
One thing actually I think it's important for us to note in this is that one of the questions that we wanted to answer, and I think we did answer, was whether or not the suspicions of especially the Democrats were correct, that there was some sort of effort by the Republican Party after the election to encourage people to vote late. We found absolutely no evidence of that in any of our interviews with voters. We did find some evidence based on some emails that we obtained from some members of the Bush campaign that they were exploring the possibility of whether it was legal to encourage people to vote late, but we found no evidence that they actually acted upon that.
Did you find that there was any political pressure, either from Democrats or Republicans, that were put on the people who were actually counting the overseas ballots?
Yes, there was tremendous pressure brought to bear by both sides on canvassing board members. But in the course of looking at the transcripts and the minutes of some of these canvassing board meetings and looking at all of the documents that were filed and letters that were written to canvassing board members in all of the counties throughout the state, we found some extreme examples. For instance, in the Panhandle, a Bush lawyer implicitly threatened canvassing board members that with federal jail time if they did not count overseas absentee votes. That's just one extreme example.
Did you try to investigate whether there was any collusion between the Bush team that was arguing to have ballots counted in Republican areas and thrown out in Democrat areas, between them and Florida Secretary of State Catherine Harris, who was certifying the vote?
We found a number of things involving Catherine Harris. One is that Catherine Harris made a series of formal pronouncements during the weeks of the recount describing her interpretation of various election laws and rules. And one of the startling discoveries we made was that there were two veteran Republican strategists who were deeply involved in actually writing those pronouncements, including a statement she made on November 13th that dealt with the rules for counting overseas absentee ballots. That statement was immediately controversial because in it she suggested that overseas ballots could be counted even if they were postmarked after the election. This is not something that had been said before by any Secretary of State in Florida as far as we could find. And Democrats viewed this statement as a gift, so to speak, to the Republican lawyers who were anxious to count as many of these ballots as possible. Now, it's difficult, though, to actually reconstruct everything that she did on this because these statements were written on several computers that were placed in what they called a war room off of her office in Tallahassee. Unfortunately, many of the records on those computers have been erased or were erased after the election, which appears to be a violation of Florida's very strict public record laws.
Did you find whether Governor Jeb Bush was involved in the count of the overseas absentee ballots?
Our investigation did not focus so much on Jeb Bush as it did on Catherine Harris. And Catherine Harris is important because, just to step back for a minute, as the state's top election official, she has an obligation to make sure that election rules are applied uniformly in Florida. And in fact, she issued a ruling in 1999, I believe, in which she said that Florida's 67 counties have to be careful to apply the absentee ballot rules in a uniform manner. And so we examined her role in this a little bit more carefully than we did Jeb Bush's role. He did have some role in this. He did help supply the Bush team with a lot of the lawyers they used in front of the canvassing boards. But he was not a primary focus of our investigation.
David Barstow and Don Venetta will be back in the second half of the show. The results of their 6-month investigation were published last Sunday in the New York Times. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with New York Times reporters David Barstow and Don Venetta. On Sunday, they published the results of their 6-month investigation into Florida's overseas absentee ballots that arrived after Election Day last year. The reporters found that 680 of those ballots that were counted were flawed and would have been disqualified had Florida's election laws been strictly enforced. Bush won the state by 537 votes. In the first half of our conversation, we discussed the Republican strategy of trying to count the flawed votes in Republican counties while trying to disqualify votes in Democratic strongholds. What was the Democratic strategy to deal with overseas ballots?
That's a simple one. Their strategy was to challenge as many improper absentee ballots as possible. They challenged hundreds of ballots, military ballots, civilian ballots, Democratic ballots, Republican ballots. I mean, even in Gore counties, they were challenging ballots. And sometimes the Bush team could simply sit back and wait for the Gore lawyers to do their work for them. They knew, as everyone did, that historically the overseas absentee vote has gone to Republican candidates. Now, there was some talk early on, some people may remember, there was talk about, well, maybe there's going to be a bunch of votes coming from Israel, people trying to vote for Joe Lieberman and Al Gore. In fact, we found that there were a few dozen ballots from Israel. I think it was, 64 ballots from Israel. Most of those ballots were actually rejected. So there really ended up being no great wave of votes from Israel. So the Gore strategy was very simply, let's challenge as many votes as possible and let's try to minimize the damage.
So I think what you're saying is that the Gore strategy was politically motivated. Let's throw out as many of these votes as possible because probably the majority of them will be for Bush. But on the other hand, they were consistent in what they challenged. They didn't have double standard for Democratic and Republican counties.
No, they were consistent even when it hurt their candidate. But yes, by all means, it was politically motivated in the sense that they made a very basic calculation. The fewer of these votes counted, the better.
Now, one Sunday during the recount era, Joe Lieberman was on Meet the Press, and he said that the Democrats shouldn't do anything to disenfranchise members of the military, and he called on Florida's canvassing boards to reconsider the rejection of military ballots. How did his statement affect the way the Democratic Party proceeded?
Oh, it had a tremendous impact. It was seen in Florida and among the Democrats themselves as an enormous retreat on this issue. Their canvassing boards, several days after that, began reconsidering rejected overseas ballots at the request of the Bush campaign. A Democratic lawyer called it the Thanksgiving stuffing operation because it occurred the week of Thanksgiving. But 14 canvassing boards, mostly in Bush counties, I think 13 of the 14 were in counties won by George W. Bush, went back and looked at the rejected overseas absentee ballots and ended up counting several hundred more that had been rejected just 1 week earlier. And quite a few of the flawed ballots, a couple of hundred of those flawed ballots, were counted then over that Thanksgiving weekend. But the Lieberman statements on Meet the Press were cited to us by those canvassing board members as one of the reasons why they went back and took another look at these ballots. So it had a tremendous impact on the count.
Now, do you know if Joe Lieberman intended to make the statement on Meet the Press, or was it just a response to the negative implications of questions he was getting, questions implying that the Democrats were limiting the rights of people in the military by not counting their ballots?
It appeared actually as though he was initially trying to say very simply, look, our strategy is not to go after military votes. Our strategy is to simply ask that only legal votes be counted. But under some pretty vigorous questioning, especially questioning that had to do with this Herron memo that Don mentioned earlier, you know, it seemed as though at that point he was taken somewhat off guard. And we know certainly from talking to Mark Herron, who wrote this memo, that he was absolutely stunned watching this unfold on national TV. So from their point of view, it was, hey, all we're asking is that these canvassing boards strictly adhere to Florida's election rules. We're not targeting military voters per se. We're just consistently seeking firm application of Florida's election laws. And yet somehow they suddenly found themselves on the defensive for targeting military votes. Herron's memo actually doesn't say anything about let's just go after military votes. His memo says, here are all the different ways you can challenge all overseas ballots.
It's interesting, too, that Senator Lieberman used the phrase benefit of the doubt in saying that the benefit of the doubt should be extended to these military ballots, because what our investigation found is the benefit of the doubt was not applied equally all over the state. The benefit of the doubt was given far more often to questionable ballots in counties that were won by George W. Bush. The counties won by Al Gore were much stricter and much more likely to throw out votes, which most likely would have been for Mr. Gore, than the counties that were won by Mr. Bush.
Now let's discuss what you didn't find in your investigation into the count of the overseas absentee vote in the presidential election. You didn't find evidence of fraud on either side.
No, we did not. We interviewed more than 300 voters all over the world, and not a single voter told us that they had been contacted by either party and encouraged to vote. That was something that the Democrats in particular suspected of the Republicans, and we found absolutely no evidence of that. However, in the course of that reporting, we did find that Republicans on the House Armed Services Committee did reach out to some voters after their ballots were rejected to get their opinions of what happened to be used as part of the Republicans' public relations campaign and legal campaign in Florida. But that was quite a bit later, about 3 weeks after Election Day when that occurred.
Well, actually, I just wanted to amplify a little bit on what Don just said about the House Armed Services Committee. I mean, one of the things that we found, and I think it's an important part of that effort, is that the House Armed Services Committee, some Republican members on the House Armed Services Committee, use some of their contacts with the Pentagon to persuade the Pentagon to provide email addresses and other contact information for some of these sailors. And that is something that at least some of the Democratic members of the committee feel was an inappropriate use of the committee's resources. The other thing that we also found, and I think this is important too, and that is one of the big challenges for the Bush campaign was, of course, to make sure that as many of these ballots got in on time to be counted as possible. In past elections, roughly a third of the overseas absentee ballots did not make it to Florida in time to be counted. They did not make it to Florida in that 10-day window after the election that's allowed by state law. But in this case, what we found is that that 97% of the overseas ballots made it to Florida in time to be counted, in part because both the United States Postal Service and the Pentagon made a strong effort under the prodding of the Bush campaign to rush the delivery of these ballots back to Florida. And so from a political point of view, it was a triumph for the Republicans to get so many of these ballots back to Florida on time to be considered by these canvassing boards.
My guests are New York Times reporters Don Vanetta and David Barstow. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guests are Don Vanetta and David Barstow, and they did a six-month investigation into the overseas absentee vote during the presidential election, and they wrote a lengthy piece on the results of their investigation Sunday in the New York Times. There is a law, and I'm not sure if this is a state law or a federal law, but there's a law that says all overseas ballots can be thrown out if the number of flawed ballots exceeds the margin of victory. Is that a state or a federal law?
It's actually contained in state precedents, state legal precedents. It's in several Florida Supreme Court decisions that have helped kind of set the guidelines for absentee ballot rules. And you're correct. There's in those Supreme Court decisions, the justices said, yes, if the number of invalid absentee ballots exceeds the margin of victory, then a judge could, in some circumstances, throw out all the absentee ballots and simply go with the machine vote on election day. Mr. Gore was aware of this. I think some of his aides argued to him that he should contest these ballots for that very reason, but he declined.
Why did he decline?
There was, I think, a real split inside the Gore team on this issue. There were strategists on the ground in Florida who desperately wanted to challenge these ballots. And there were lawyers, too, who wanted to go after them because it would give the Gore team a chance before the Supreme Court to make the argument in rebutting the Republicans' equal protection arguments that, in fact, there was disparate treatment when these ballots were counted. So we were told by some of those lawyers that felt strongly about this and strategists that they wanted to make that argument before the Supreme Court and also make it publicly. But Warren Christopher and Bill Daley advised Al Gore not to challenge these ballots because the military vote had become such a political third rail for the Democrats, and they had felt so badly burned by the country's outrage at what had occurred that they shied away from it.
If the Gore team had gone to court, could they have proven that the number of flawed ballots exceeded the margin of victory in the overseas ballots? Would the math have worked in the Gore team's favor?
It would have been incredibly difficult for them to do that. I mean, it took us literally months of effort to, first of all, collect all of these absentee ballot envelopes. Secondly, to analyze them very carefully. I mean, we went to incredible lengths to understand these ballots, the ballot envelopes. For example, there were postmarks in Arabic, and we went out and translated those postmarks. It would have been very, very tough for them in the time that they had to have proven that the number of ballots that didn't comply with state law exceeded the margin of victory.
Yeah, they only had anecdotal evidence from some counties. They knew, for instance, that in Clay County, two ballots had been faxed from Maryland and had been accepted. I mean, they knew of certain problems with ballots in certain places, but there were only a handful that they really knew about. So there's no way they would have been able to make that argument.
How would you kind of sum up the results of your study into the overseas absentee vote?
I think the best way to summarize it is that the Republicans pursued an extremely sophisticated, aggressive strategy that had a direct impact on the results. The strategy was to do everything possible to get as many military ballots counted in Florida, but while at the same time, in counties won by Al Gore, below the radar screen, challenging ballots from civilians, overseas civilians, and we saw the results of that. The results were that 680 ballots that had some kind of flaw, some of them multiple flaws, were still accepted in Florida. And some of the flaws I wanted to add, Terry, are you know, we found a good number, more than 100 ballots that had postmarks from inside the United States. These are, you know, these are overseas ballots that get this privilege of arriving within 10 days after the election. The ballots, absentee ballots from inside the United States, must arrive in Florida by 7 o'clock on election day, yet more than 100 ballots with domestic postmarks from places like Corpus Christi, Texas, and San Diego, and Nashville were accepted, even though they arrived after election day. We found 19 voters who cast two ballots, and both of them were counted. That occurred in Duval County. The Duval County election officials there said it was a mistake, but 19 voters in an election where many people were very frustrated that they didn't get one vote, 19 voters got two votes in Duval County. We found five ballots that were received by canvassing boards after the November 17th deadline, and yet they were still counted. One arrived, I think, on November 21st.
I mean, it's actually, just to circle back a little bit on these ballots that had domestic postmarks, a lot of them came from military towns in the United States, places like Everett, Washington, and Hampton Roads, Virginia. We actually tracked down many of these voters, and they again, freely admitted to us that, yeah, we were inside the United States on election day. We sent in our ballot, and the ballot was counted. Overwhelmingly, these ballots were counted in Bush counties. Of the 680 ballots that didn't comply with state law, four out of five of them were counted in Bush counties.
Governor Jeb Bush of Florida signed a new election law into effect in May. How does that change the overseas voting and vote counting?
The law has changed to allow ballots to be counted that do not have postmarks or even have late postmarks. The law states clearly that the election supervisors must provide a place on these ballots for voters to sign the date when they sign the ballot. One of the problems in Florida is that 66 of the 67 counties had no place for voters to put dates on the ballots. So the only proof that the ballot was cast before election day or on election day was the postmark. But now Florida is doing everything possible in the future to make sure that voters actually do put the date when they sign them. And so postmarks will not matter nearly as much under the new law as they did under the old law.
Not to be too cynical, but isn't it really easy to just post-date something, just to say it's a few days later, earlier than it really is?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. We did talk to a couple of voters who actually admitted to us that, yeah, we did backdate our ballots. The other thing that I wanted to mention about this reform package is that, on the one hand, while there's now a law that basically makes the postmark irrelevant, the local election officials in Florida are also appealing to the Justice Department to simply do away with this 10-day window that's allowed for receiving overseas absentee ballots. And that would just simply make the whole question of late voting, that would make that moot.
So ballot would have to be in by election day to be counted.
Yes, yes. They've made or are planning to petition the Justice Department to simply do away with this 10-day window. I think that none of them will miss having to ponder the questions of postmarks.
What's next on the recount front? The story really isn't completely over yet. There's still a consortium of newspapers, including the New York Times, that is in the middle of their own recount. What's the story with that?
Well, the story is that they're still counting. They hope to complete their recount sometime later this summer.
What are they recounting?
They're recounting everything, every single regular ballot, punch card ballot, absentee ballot. They are going back with the help of a private research firm, and analyzing ballot by ballot, both the overvotes, these are ballots where someone selected more than one candidate for president and the undervotes, where a machine or a man recorded no vote for president, and trying to see whether there were votes that were missed. That's an entirely separate endeavor from the work that Don and I did this earlier this year.
My guests are New York Times reporters David Barstow and Don Vanatta. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are New York Times reporters David Barstow and Don Vanatta. We're discussing their six-month investigation into the count of Florida's late-arriving overseas absentee ballots in the presidential election. You got access to the overseas ballots, to about 2,490 overseas ballots. Was it hard to get access to them? What did you have to do?
It was not hard to get access to them in the sense that Florida has a very wide-open sunshine law, which makes all of this information public record. It was difficult, though, practically speaking, to retrieve them all. We had to literally, David and I, travel around the state and go to many election supervisors' offices and actually literally photocopy them ourselves. We also were fortunate enough to have the use of a law firm in Florida and paralegals there and staff there that helped us also collect them. But we collected all 3,700 overseas absentee ballot envelopes, not just the 2,490 that were accepted, but the other 1,300 or so that were rejected, and compiled them all and sent them to a firm in Maryland that put them into a database, so we were able to then look at the patterns and trends, and you know, the truth really emerged from the database about what occurred.
Who's not talking, who you still want to hear from because they have key pieces of the puzzle here?
Well, at the top of the list is Catherine Harris. David and I attempted to interview her for over the two-week period before the story was published, and she declined. Her spokesperson told us that she was going to be in Argentina when the story was published and that she would prefer to respond to our story in an op-ed piece when she returned. So we never had a chance to speak with her. We also wanted to speak with Jim Baker. Mr. Baker was instrumental in the Bush team strategy. He was the person that made so many of the most important public statements during the post-election period, and he also declined our request for an interview.
Has your investigation made you think that the outcome of the election was the wrong outcome?
You know what? We haven't actually worried about that. We worried about just trying to figure out what the heck happened in Florida. It's such a complicated subject. We just simply wanted to try to set out for our readers to the best of our ability what happened with this critical batch of ballots. Again, without these ballots, Al Gore wins by 202 votes. Bush rode to victory on the backs of these ballots. And we were just it's a very complicated story, and we just poured all of our energies into trying to figure it out and report it as true as we could.
So you mean without any of the absentee ballots at all?
Without any of the overseas absentee ballots, without these 2,490 ballots that were ultimately counted after the election, Gore wins by 202 votes.
Mm-hmm. And that information was not known last November. Because if you remember, the initial group of overseas absentee ballots were counted on November 17th, 10 days after Election Day, and Mr. Bush picked up a net gain of 630 votes at that time. So he never trailed, and Al Gore never caught Mr. Bush, and of course, that had a huge impact on what occurred. When it was all over and all of the recounts, the manual recounts, particularly in Broward County, were completed and added to the certified total that Catherine Harris certified on November 26th, it became clear that, in fact, Mr. Gore, without these ballots, actually did receive 202 more votes than George W. Bush.
I do think, Terry, that actually our findings shift new light on to Catherine Harris's decision to not give Palm Beach, you may recall Palm Beach wanted a little bit more time to complete their manual recounts. And it was coming down to the kind of the penultimate deadline on the 26th of November. And Palm Beach was asking Harris for more time. She declined to extend the deadline. And as a result, I think it was 176 votes for Mr. Gore were not counted. Our statistician from Harvard said that now that if we factor those votes in along with the votes, the 680 improper absentee ballots that were counted, Mr. Gore had a substantially greater chance of perhaps pulling this thing out. At the time, that decision didn't seem decisive. It seemed as though Bush had won by 537 votes, and this 176 votes from Palm Beach were not all that important. Now, with our findings, according to our statistician at least, it becomes much more significant for, at least for historians.
Well, I want to thank you both for talking with us about your investigation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
New York Times reporters Don Vanetta and David Barstow spent 6 months investigating Florida's absentee overseas ballots. Their findings were published last Sunday in the Times.